Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you on this Rosh Chodesh from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Daled, and we're holding right at the top. Yesterday we dropped off when we found out that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava single-handedly, that's what it sounded like, single-handedly maintained Dinei Krasot in Yisrael, and we were using that as a proof that you only need one individual to give smicha. And the Braita had said, smicha v'smichat zekenim, which would imply that even giving smicha required three people. So that was our question. But meanwhile, we were right in the middle of the story, and we were about to hear how it was that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava had single-handedly seen to it that Dinei Knasot would survive in Klal Yisrael by seeing to it that the smicha would survive in Klal Yisrael. Shepa'am achat gazra malchut arsha'a gezera Yisrael. The Romans once made this terrible decree. They were trying to wipe out the smicha. Now, this was actually a very brilliant plan, as the Ben Ishchai points out, because they know that the Jews always going around singing, Mir vilen zeyib eleben, we'll outlive them and their gezerot will all be bottle, which, of course, has always been true. And this is very frustrating to all of those people who do not want to end up being on the other end of the gallows, like the Nazis and the Humans and so on. So they came up with this diabolical plan. What could we do that would actually survive us? And the Jews could never make it up. We could be mevatel the smicha. Because once you end up canceling the smicha, you'll never be able to get the smicha back again. And then all will remember the noble Romans who were able to be mevatel the smicha. So that was their grand plan. So they made a decree that kol ha-somech yehareg, anybody who gives smicha will be executed. For kol ha-nismach yehareg, anybody who accepts smicha, he will also be executed. And if a city is used in which you give smicha, the entire town shall be burnt to the ground. And even if it's outside the town, it won't matter. The entire tchum of that town will be wiped out. And the tchumim, some learn it means, which I don't believe, but some learn it means tchumim. It means the markers of the tchum will be torn out. But that's not the mashmaut over here at all. Ma'asa Yehuda ben Bava. So Yehuda ben Bava had a brilliant idea. Halach v'yashavlo ben shnei arim gedolim u'ben shtei ayarot gedolot u'ben shnei tchumei Shabbat. What he did was he selected an area that was not actually within the boundaries of any city at all, and he sat right next to these mountains, so just in case the Romans would decide, well, if we can't destroy the city, we'll uproot the mountain. So then that would give us a wonderful rail tunnel in just a few centuries hence, and that would be fine. So anyway, so he sat in that place, which is very cute if you think about it, because the dinim of the Zakanim was also necessary for measuring for the Egla Rufa was the other meaning of the smicha, right? So they had to be semech es yideim, but they had to measure. So he measured precisely giving smicha in such a way that it shouldn't cause any damage. So there he was between these mountains and between two big cities, between two Shabbos tchumim. So it was not close to either. Ben Usha, Lishfar'am. So, of course, he was familiar with Barnea's neighborhood. So he chose Usha and Shfar'am to give it in. And he went and he gave smicha to five zikenim. Ve'elohen, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. And Rabbi Avia says, no, you forgot one. He also gave smicha to Rabbi Nechemiah. Okay. Givanchi kiru oiveyem bayem. All of a sudden, they saw these policemen up on the ridge, and they were coming down, and he says to them, run, bonai, rutsu, my sons, start running. So the Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, we can't leave you behind, mate alecha. What's going to happen to you? Amrullah, Amalayam. So he said to them, areni mutalif neem kevin she'in lahofchim. I'm going to lie down here like a rock, and they won't be able to even turn me, meaning I don't have any intention of running away from these guys. I'll actually serve as a decoy. And it probably was too old to be able to really run. Omru that indeed, lo zazu misham ad shenatzu bo shalosh meos lunvios shel barzel v'yasu chichvara. They were so furious at Rav Yehuda ben Bova that they actually threw 300 metal spears, or I forgot what they call them, and turned them into a sieve. But anyway, so it says over here, it sure sounds like that Rav Yehuda ben Bava single-handedly maintained Dinei Kedushas B'Yisrael, but that would mean that you're able to give smicha single-handedly. And we claim that in order to give smicha, you need three zakenim. So how do you understand this at all? No, the point is not that there was only Rav Yehuda ben Bava. Well, we meant that Rav Yehuda ben Bava single-handedly in the sense that he was the great mover. There were, technically, he needed three people, so he brought another two people. But we're not going to tell you the story about those three people. The whole point over here was to show the immense derecherets that we had for what it was that Rav Yehuda ben Bava had moved and had achieved. Now, one thing I didn't understand about the story, you say that one of those five zakenim was Rabbi Meir, but I thought that it was Rabbi Akiva that gave smicha to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, you're telling me it was Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava who gave smicha to Rabbi Meir, but Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chona, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Anybody who claims that Rabbi Meir was not given smicha by the generation before Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, meaning by Rabbi Akiva himself, Eino Ela To'eh, is just making a big mistake. It's Rabbi Akiva that had given Rabbi Meir smicha, even though Rabbi Meir was only a kid at the time that Rabbi Akiva had been killed. So he must have given him smicha as a boy before he was even married. And that's the fact. Rabbi Akiva did. Yes, said the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva did, but nobody accepted that smicha. Samche Rabbi Akiva, but because of the fact that Rabbi Meir was so young, lo kiblo, the other chachomim did not accept him as being a samuch. And afterwards, when he grew up, it was Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava who gave him smicha again, and at that point he was accepted by all as a samuch. Omer Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, one of the other dinim of smicha that we haven't pointed out is that the keach of smicha is givable only in Eretz Yisrael. There's no such thing as smicha in Chutz Laretz. Now, when you say there's no such thing as smicha in Chutz Laretz, I mean, surely you don't mean ilema de lo dine dine knosses klal b'chutz laretz, that if a dayan who has smicha and is in Chutz Laretz, and he also has rishus from the Resh Galuta, so he's able to be dan. You're telling me he can't dan the neknosis because the smicha isn't active in Chutz Laretz? Is that what you're saying? But that's not true. It's a beferish a Mishnah that Sanhedrin noeget bein baretz bein b'chutz laretz. If Sanhedrin is noeget in Chutz Laretz, it means that if people that have smicha who are on Sanhedrin go to Chutz Laretz, then it's fully functional in Chutz Laretz, which would mean that certainly you could be done in Ekrosas. It can't mean that. What it must mean is that the Lo Samchinan b'Chutz Laretz, we cannot give smicha with Dayanim who are standing in Chutz Laretz to people in Chutz Laretz. We can't do such a thing because the concept of smicha is related specifically to the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, Ki Mitzion Tetze Torah, and to the concept of there being a Lishkas HaGozis and a Mokan in which a Roh is Yotze LiYisrael. None of that is Shayach to Chutz Laretz. Once somebody has smicha, he can function in Chutz Laretz with the smicha. But to give over smicha as from the Mokar, which is drawing directly from the Lishkas HaGozis and from the Mokam HaMikdash, there's no way to do that in Chutz Laretz. Okay, so now what, in fact, would be the rulings in several different kind of cases? It's obvious, one thing, is that if the people giving the smicha are outside, they're in Chutz Laretz, And the people that they're giving smicha to are not standing next to them. They are in Eretz Yisrael. That for sure is not going to work. Because even if they were standing next to them, you wouldn't be able to give them smicha. So Amrin Adullah, we said we can't give smicha from outside Eretz Yisrael. But the question is, suppose the people giving the smicha are in Eretz Yisrael, and the people receiving the smicha will be receiving the smicha in Chutz Laretz. Is that a real smicha? Because there's different approaches to this. Is the question because they're not in their presence and calling someone a somuch is similar to the idea of the smicha yadayim, so it has to be al yad, it has to be nearby? Is that the question? Or is the question really, do we need Kedushas Haaretz in order to be able to give the smicha? Okay, the Pashas way Rashi understands it is the question of whether they need to be next to you in order for you to give smicha. Till Tashma, Rabbi Yochanan was trying very hard to give Rabbi Shaman Bar Abba, to get him to have smicha. Rabbi Shaman Bar Abba was not nearby, and he was never able to give him smicha. Lo havi gabei d'lismicha. And there were also Rabbi Shimon ben Zerud that he wanted to give smicha to, together with his chavrusa. And who was that? That was Rabbi Yonatan ben Achmai. Or some say it was the other way around, that Rabbi Yochanan wanted to give Rabbi Yonatan ben Achmai smicha and his chavrusa. His chavrusa was Rabbi Shimon ben Zerud. But in any event, so one of them was there, and one of them wasn't there. Now, I don't know which one is which. That's why we set it over in two different orders. But in any event, the one that was near, he was able to give smicha to. But the ones that were not nearby, he was never able to give smicha to, which seems to imply that you need to have the person nearby in order to give him smicha. Otherwise, Rabbi Yochanan could have sent the smicha. There was another maisa like that, where Rabbi Yochanan was trying to give smicha to Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Hoshaya. We also have a mishtaket, Rabbi Yochanan, the mismachino. He was trying very hard to give them smicha, and never worked out. Lo havi mistaya milta. So either whenever they wanted to give smicha, the government was nearby, and they didn't want to allow smicha, or the way Rashi understands it, was lo havi mistaya milta, because he couldn't get together three people. Which means that according to Rashi, apparently all three people need to have smicha, because otherwise what's the problem to get two people without smicha to join your bezdin, and then you who do have smicha to give smicha, that shouldn't be a problem to get three people together. And therefore, it seems to be a machlokas, because the Rambam definitely paskins that you only need one out of the three to be himself a samuch, even if you need three dayanim to be there. But whatever the case was, it never worked out. Rabbi Yochanan really felt very, very bad about that, because he felt that these people were big talmidei chachamim, and they should have smicha, and it was important to have as many people that could have smicha to be able to continue the smicha. As we mentioned, by the way, you'll recall, at this grand plan of the Romans to be mevatel smicha, that the Rambam, remember, mentions that he believes that it isn't true that you would be permanently mevatel the smicha, and that if such a thing would happen, as has happened bizmanenu, all you would need to do would be to get together the sum total of the Torah knowledge in Eretz Yisrael by having all the talmidei chachamim agree that this is the total of the Teras Meisha that's biyadenu, and then they could give it over as a smicha to somebody new and restart the smicha. What the Rambam neglected to mention was that it would take a miracle to get all these people together to agree on anything. So because of that, it's basically it's being semech al hanes. But so the Romans weren't so stupid after all. All right, but anyway, getting back to the story, so Rabbi Yochanan was extremely upset, and he felt that maybe he didn't have the schus to be able to give the smicha to these people that he wanted to, and they told him, Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Hoshaya said to him, you should not believe for a moment that it's your fault. Lo nitztayermar. It's entirely because of us. And perhaps you're not aware of the fact that we are descendants from Beit Eli, And remember that there was a terrible curse on the house of Eli, that Shmuel Hanavi was the one that was the beginning of his Nevi'ahs, was that he told over Eli that he was given the Nevi'ahs of this curse. The Omer of Shmuel bar Nachman Omer Rabbi Yonatan, Minayin she'ein nismachim lebeit Eli. How do we know that people from that family are never going to get smicha? It's just not going to work out. Part of that terrible prophecy against Eli was that there will not be a zakein in your family forever. Now, what does a zakein mean? What do you think a zakein means? Do you think a zakein means there will never be an elderly person in your home? Well, that's obvious, because it says in the other pasuk, v'chol marbit beitcha yamutu anashim, all of the rest of your family will die young, which means that they're not even, they're going to, when they reach the age of 18, they're going to die. So if they're not going to grow past the age of 18, so then how would they possibly be elders? So it must mean elders mean that they will not get smicha even before they're 18, so that there'll never be anyone who gets smicha. So apparently it's saying that there will not be smicha. How could they actually end up being real elders with smicha? That because the Gemara says that it only says in the pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this will never be mechupar with any type of korban. You'll never be able to be mechapar on this terrible sin. So we're medayik, but that means that there is a kapara. What is the kapara? With Torah and with chasodim. So Torah and Gemilas Chasodim will work even though Nimyechupar Avon Hazeh will never be with any type of Zevach ve'korban. That not. So even so, if they grow old, it'll never work out. No matter how big Chachomim they are, it'll never work out that they should get Smicha. Therefore, you, Rabbi Yochanan, are not to blame. And it's all because of our family that you weren't able to give us Smicha. Rabbi Zera actually would hide out if he found out that anybody was around that wanted to give him smicha. He would immediately jump ship so that they couldn't find him and they couldn't give him smicha. Why? Because he had learned from Rabbi Elazar, the olam have kobel v'kayam. This is basically the Mishnah Novos. The best thing to do to live a long life is to always stay in the dark, meaning avoid the bright lights. The more you're out there on the internet, the more rapid will be your demise. So therefore, what do I need my name to be out there for? You're kidding. First thing they do when you get smicha is they put it right there on the internet site of Nismachim. I don't want to be on there. I want to live. Kiman de Shamal Adam Rabbi Elazar, but then he heard another thing that Rabbi Elazar had taught. Ein Adam ole l'gdula, elim ken mochlin lo al kol avonotav. When a person becomes great, he is zeche to give a kapora on all of his avenais. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meichalim. Rabbi Zera said, oh my gosh, now that's worth dying for. So he decided, okay, now I'm going to make myself available for smicha. So he started walking around with a big sign. Anyone who wants to give me smicha is welcome. So because of that, he was amtsi le'anavshe. He gave himself over to smicha. It's very interesting that this lashon of amtsi le'anavshe, not anavshe, was the lashon that was used when the Malach HaMaves was very frustrated at being unable to collect the neshama because he was learning the whole time. So he knocked on the door and he said, it's not fair. Even if I was just a poor man, wouldn't you give me money? I got a job to do and I'm supposed to be collecting your soul. So it says over there, I'm Sile Nafshe. So it's mamish, the same kimat word for word that he uses over here. Anyway, kisamachu the Rebbe Zera. So when they gave smicha to Rebbe Zera, so the people went out and they made a whole party and they made up a song. And they used the song that is used at a wedding. It was the famous song that we had in the Ksuves, where the Kala, They would always sing that the Kala is beautiful without needing to pretty herself up. She is just a naturally beautiful person. So that's what they sang about Rabbi Zera. Lo kachal, v'lo shirak, v'lo pirkus, v'yal aschein. That this Kala doesn't wear any eyeshadow, and she doesn't wear any rouge, and she doesn't go ahead and dye her hair, and she still is absolutely beautiful. So this is Rabbi Zera, as real a person as you could get, doesn't need any kind of prettying up, and is just beautiful. Kisamachu, the Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, they made up a different song. When Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi were given smicha, they sang this song. Kol min den, kol min den, smochu lana. It's these kind of people that we want to have smicha for. All these other rabbis that have been getting out of these seminaries lately are a bunch of garbage. Lo tismachu lano, lo misar mitin, v'lo misar misin. Please, no more of these smartutim. They're just a bunch of rags. They never teach properly. We don't want any of these sarmisim people who are misares. They make up these phonies for us and they make it sound fancy. That's not the kind of rabbis we want. And some say what they said was, lo mechamisin, the lo miturmisin. We don't want the people who are mchomes, meaning they steal the Torah from us by never teaching it to us properly. And we don't want turmisin. Turmisin is in English, it's the lupines. You know, they have the turmisin season over here. Everybody goes to see the lupines. I think there's a beautiful children's book, Mama Lupine, or something like that. Anyway, Grandma Lupine. But so what does it mean, Rashi says? I have no idea. What does exactly a turmis mean as a rav? But some say that turmisim are extremely bitter. You notice that some of these rabbis, they're just very bitter. That's that classic picture, you know, Gothic, American Gothic. These religious people, they just look terribly bitter. So we don't want any of these bitter people. Bring us people like Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi with a big smile on their face and a happiness and willingness to engage. Rabbi Abo was extremely powerful, very popular, friendly with Caesar himself. He used to be the one that represented Klal Yisrael in the house of Caesar, and he was also a physically gorgeous person. He was similar to the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says when Rabbi Abu would come from the Beis HaMedrash to the house of Caesar, Nafke Matronita de Bekesar Meshayimai, the women from the household of the Caesar would come out and they would sing it to him. And they would call him Rabba de Ame, the great one of his people. Madbarna du Mase, the leader of his nation. Butsina de Nohura, as bright and beautiful as a burning candle. Brich Matiach Lishlam, your coming should be as omen of peace. Yeah, those are the kind of leaders we need. Oh, gosh. Okay, moving on now. So the next sugya that we had in our Mishnah was the question of Arifas HaEgla. So there we had a machlokes that according to Rabbi Shimon, in order to do the Arifas HaEgla, when we discovered a murdered individual, we didn't know who had killed him. So somebody was mugged in the street. You have to bring the Egla Arufa. And according to Rabbi Shimon, you need a bezdin of three. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need here too a bezdin of five. So we hadn't discussed that. We talked about Smichas and Canaan, but we didn't talk about the Machlokes, about Arifas Egla Rufa. So Tanu Rabban, here too, we darshan the extra words of Loshen Rabbim. So we have plural. We darshan each one of those plurals as meaning another two judges. So it says, V'yatsu, Zekeinecha V'shoftecha. So Zekeinecha means two, Shoftecha means two, and four, you can't have a Beit Din that is even. Mosifin aliyem od echad. This gets us to five, and that's the basis of Reb Yehuda's psak in the Mishnah that we need five zekenim. Divrei Reb Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you need three. It says zekenecha, that's two. Ein Beit Din shakul. So you can't have an even number. So now this is the same machlokas that we saw before, except it can't be based on same psukim, obviously. But it's the same idea that according to Rabbi Shimon, we do not make the extra drasha, and all we say is that the zekinecha means two, which gives us a bezdin of three, and he doesn't care about that extra word, shoftecha. Why not? For Rabbi Shimon, hai shoftecha mai ovidle. Well, what does he do with that extra word? It seems to mean that there are another two judges. No. Rabbi Shimon says, Shoftecha is there to tell me that in order to be able to do the Egla Rufa, you need to have Miyuchadim Shebeshoftecha. The greatest of your judges has to actually be the ones, meaning people that are on the Sanhedrin Gedela. They're the ones that have to measure the distance to the nearest city, and therefore we're left only with one Lashon, which means two Dayanim. But the Shoftecha, that's coming to tell me that they're members of Sanhedrin. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, how does he know that only people that are members of the big Sanhedrin, how does he know that? Well, Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, it could have said Ziknei, and instead it says Zikinecha. Zikinecha means the special members, the special elders, which would be members of the special Sanhedrin. So it's the same idea. So therefore, we don't need the Shoftecha to tell me they're members of Sanhedrin. And that gives us an extra plural Loshan, which gives us another two Dayanim. And Rabbi Shimon says, no. Had it only said Zekeneh, and it wouldn't have said Zekenecha, I would have thought that that meant, again, this is a review, almost the same concepts we had before. I would have said that means just a regular Dayan, but he doesn't have to be a member of Sanhedrin. And therefore, I need to know Zekenecha. But if it only said Zekenecha and it wouldn't have said Shoftecha, I would have thought, yes, they have to be special and they have to be members of Sanhedrin. But they could be members of even of a Sanhedrin Ketana, not of the grand Sanhedrin of 72 judges, that not. 71 judges, that not, because of Rachmana v'shoftecha, to add the most miyuchadim shebishoftecha. So that means only la creme de la creme is going to be usable for measuring the distance. And how does Rabbi Yehuda actually know that it doesn't mean the smaller Sanhedrin, and it doesn't mean just regular judges? How does he know all of those drushes? Well, says Rabbi Yehuda, I don't need all of that, because I already know that the word zekenim we learned out just a little while ago from the din of smicha zekenim. What did it say over there? The samchu ziknei ha'eda et yedehem? Well, it's the same thing over here. It's using the same word, zekenim. So therefore, I have a gzera shava. Just like it says ziknei, but the din of smicha zekenim on the par elam dover, so too it says zekenim on the din of egla rufa. So malalan miyuchadim shebeida, afkan miyuchadim shebeida. So if it means over there, as we went through at great length, and I showed you what that meant, it meant absolutely the best. So it means the same thing over here. Says the Gemara, excuse me, if Rabbi Yehuda actually has a Gzeres Shavah, then he could have learned everything out of that Gzeres Shavah. He could have learned that you need the five Dayanim just from the fact that it says Zekeni. After all, isn't there a klal that ain Gzeres Shavah lamechza? If you have a Gzeres Shavah, you use it to derive all of the dinim in one sugya to the other. So if he actually had this Kabbalah of Gzeres Shavah like that, then Leilav Kula Miyatam, he could have learned the five from there. So why was he going through all of this kvetching about Zekenecha is two, and Shoftecha is two, and that gives us four, and therefore we can't have an even best? Then it's quite clear that Rabbi Yehuda did not have this Gzera Shava, because if he did, this was an exercise in futility. So therefore, let's drop that. It's obviously not a Gzera Shava. It must be that Rabbi Yehuda has an extra drasha. What is that extra drasha? The vav of vishoftecha, that is necessary to tell me another two. Yeah, as far as what the word shoftecha itself means there, I agree with Rabbi Shimon's drasha, that shoftecha means that only if you're a member of the Sanhedrin Gedola, yes, that's true, But since it says Vishavtecha, it's coming to tell me that I need another two judges. And Rabbi Shimon in general does not use the letter Vav as an extra drasha. So now it all is very consistent with the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon elsewhere. But now, says the Gemara, this whole idea is like very strange. They're telling me every time it uses a plural language, it's always adding another two judges. I mean, if you're talking about every place that uses the plural, well, it also said v'yatzu, they come out. Okay, so then that means two judges. Umadadu, and they measure. That tells us another two judges. I mean, according to that, instead of Rabbi Yehuda needing five judges, you should need nine judges. So the Rabbi Yehuda are tisha, according to Rabbi Shimon, who normally would have said it's three judges, now we've got another four. So now there should be seven? No. The truth is, stop making fun of us. Actually, we would have said that. However, each one of those words is required for a drasha and not to add shoftim. Ahumi boile likidit tanya. V'yatzu means they themselves have to get up out of their seats, leave the Sanhedrin, and come out to Timbuktu or wherever it is and do the measurement. And you can't say, well, it's okay, I'll send my trusty bailiff. No, you won't send your trusty bailiff. You're going to get up and you're going to go there. That's why it says v'yatzu. Hein v'lo shulchan. They cannot send anyone in their place. And when it says umadadu, they must measure. That's coming to tell me a big chiddush. Sha'afilo nimtza ba'alil la'ir. Even if it's quite clear what city is responsible, it's right outside of one city and it's nowhere near any other city. So what's the point of saying they have to come out and they have to measure? Not true. The umadadu is coming to tell me that the act of measurement per se is something that they are mechuyev to do. And that means tzorich la'asok b'medida, the entire beautiful, it's a pageantry in which people come out all the way from Yerushalayim and from the city, and they're measuring. It makes a tremendous impact for people to see the level of communal responsibility for someone who might have been sent out on the road without having a levli, without having food, and because of that, we want to make it a mitzvah to do, whether or not it is necessary. That requires an extra pasuk, because otherwise I would say, well, obviously they're going to have to measure if they need to find out, but if it's quite clear, what's the point? Kamash malon, a measurement per se is a mitzvah. Now, it doesn't say anything here about other people coming. It just says that the dayanim have to come and measure, but the braita says not like that. And obviously our Mishnah is not going according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who says in the Braita as follows. Matnitin de loki haitan, Tanya. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, v'yatsu zikeinecha v'shoftecha. Zikeinecha, yes, that refers to Sanhedrin. But shoftecha, that refers to the melech, so the king has to come out. And the Kohen Gadol has to come out, according to him. Well, our mission, same thing about kings and Kohen Gadols. Melech, how do I know, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that the king has to come out? Because it says in the pasuk, Melech b'mishpat yamid oretz. So wrote Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei. And the Kohen Gadol, Nechtibu vata l'kohanim ha-leviyim ve'el ha-shofet. So that means that the greatest of the Leviim, who is the Kohen Gadol, he is the one that is also called the ultimate Shofet, and therefore the Shoftecha, the two great Shoftim, refers to your king and to the Kohen Gadol. Now the question is, does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov also hold that the concept of the Sanhedrin is what comes out, not the Dayan? So if you're telling me the king has to come and the Kohen Gadol has to come, then when he said that Sanhedrin has to come, he may mean Sanhedrin has to come. Meaning the entire Sanhedrin has to get up and come. Because if the king and Kohen Gadol are coming, now that would be an incredible sign of the entire community. Wow. Comes out because some schmo got himself murdered on the road because he was a homeless person. So for a homeless person, the president of the country comes, the entire Congress comes, and the Supreme Court comes. I can imagine the impact such a thing would make instead of having people walking around burning up people on the subway because they're homeless. It's unbelievable, the level of responsibility. And maybe that's what he meant. So Riboelu, did Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov argue about that as well? Or was he only arguing about whether you need the Melech and the Kohen Gadol? So Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, b'chad apalik, was he arguing about one point? Or was he arguing about 2 points? And he was saying, it's not about the judges, it's about the Sanhedrin. Do we say that he was only arguing about the Melech and the Kohen Gadol pligi? But when it comes to the responsibility of the Sanhedrin, he agrees. I'm not sure whether he needs, five or three, I don't know. But he would agree with one of the other shitas, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, or maybe he disagrees about the Sanhedrin, and he feels the Sanhedrin amipali, and he holds the entire Sanhedrin has to come out together with the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. Rav Yosef, I got a brilliant proof for you, okay? Listen to this one, you'll love this. So it says like this. We know there's a din of Zaken Mamre. Remember the din of Zaken Mamre is that if the Sanhedrin issues a psak about something, and there's one of the Dayanim, very smart guy, and he feels that they're making a ridiculous mistake, and he tells them, I disagree with you, and I am not accepting of this psak, and he teaches people not to follow that psak. So the halacha is that he's put to death, and that's called the Zaken Mamre. So in that halacha about Zaken Mamre, it says in a brighter like this, that if this Zaken bumps into the Sanhedrin at Beit Pagi, and it's there that he says, I disagree with you and I will not accept this. So he was there in Beit Pagi, Vihimra Alehim, and it's there that he rebels against them. You might think that that is considered to be a proper rebellion, and he would be chayav as a Zaken Mamre. Yochotehe Hamra'ato Hamra'a. Talmud Omar v'kamta v'alita el ha-makom, el ha-mech ha-makom goreim. Therefore, it comes to say, you shall go up to the place, meaning it's only if he does this in that place, that is to say, in the Lishkat HaGazis itself. But if he meets them somewhere else, let's say in Beit Pagi, you remember Beit Pagi, we discussed the din of Beit Pagi. Beit Pagi was originally Chutz L'Choma, and then they extended the Choma and built another enclave around Beit Pagi, and gave it the din of Kedushas Yerushalayim. In any event, but it's the furthest out place of Yerushalayim. Today they call Beit Pagi what used to be the furthest place outside of Yerushalayim 60 years ago. That was called Beit Pagi at the end of Sanhedria. So that was given the name Beit Pagi, but on the same basis. So in any event, it says over here that the Besdin was in Beit Pagi. We have to interrupt because of Lotosim Domim Beveitecha. Actually, Oris are not allowed to have a boost with a cover on it because Chas V'Shalom, the cover can be bitten off. There is no cover? Oh, okay. I should have known my Gabi wouldn't make a mistake like that. It's amazing. It looks to me like there's a cover. But I guess not. Okay. So in any event, how do you explain the fact that he bumped in to the Sanhedrin in Beit Pagi? How many of the Sanhedrin did he bump into? So how many people were there? Was it just a minority of the Sanhedrin? How can you say that the only reason you're not going to put this Zaken Mamre to death for his rebellion, what rebellion? Maybe most of the Sanhedrin who was left behind would actually agree with him. So why would I even think that I need to discuss where? It's not a question of where. It's a question of the Sanhedrin needing to paskin against him. So that can't be the case, because Dilma Hanach Dika Gavoy, the ones that were left in the Lishkas HaGozis, might agree 100% with him. So that can't be what we're talking about. Elapshita, we've got to be talking about a case where the entire Sanhedrin was in Beit Pagi. Now, how in the world would the entire Sanhedrin be in Beit Pagi? I got news for you. The entire Sanhedrin is not allowed to be in Beit Pagi for the very simple reason that the Pasuk says you must never have less than a quorum left in the Sanhedrin Agdala, and the quorum consists of at least the amount of a Sanhedrin Ketana. So, Ila Militvar Rashus Mimotzin Ofek, Vaktiv Shorerech Agan Hasar Al Yechsar Hamozek. So, what is that referring to? What is the notion of your navel? What could be your navel in terms of the entire nation? The navel is understood as a reference to the Mokum of the Migdash and the Kedusha of the Lishkas HaKosis. That's the place where you're given your chias from the Mother Earth and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina. And that's your navel. And it says it's shaped like a moon, the crescent of the moon. Where is a navel shaped like a crescent of the moon? With the Goren Chatzi Goren Agula. That's the way that a Sanhedrin is sitting. And it says over there, Al Yechsar HaMozeg. What is the mozeg? The mezeg of wine is actually the 1/3. So that means you need to have the mezeg in the Bezdin at all times. So therefore, it's got to be that we're talking about that the entire Sanhedrin had gone out, not because they just decided to go out. There must have been a special purpose that was mechayev the Besdin to go out. So, pshita l'dvar mitzvah. Okay. You weren't even allowed to go to the bathroom, that's the Rambam Paskins, if you're a judge, unless you look around and make sure that there's a quorum there the whole time. So, hechidami. So, tell me why in the world they went out. He's late for the daf today, Ari. So, it must be that they went out for one purpose only that we could think of. They must have gone out to measure the egla rufa. There's my brilliant proof. Ha-ha. So you see that according to Rabbi Ben Yaakov, that in Archinami, you must need the entire Sanhedrin to go out. And that's what they were doing in Beit Pagi. They were just on their way to do a medida of the egla arufa. So from this unlikely source, we have a solution. Rabbi Eliezer holds not only the king, not only the Kohen Gadol, but also the entire Sanhedrin goes out for the purpose of the medida. Elapshita l'dvar mitzvah, lav l'medidat egla. And it's going like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakovi, the Omar Kula Sanhedrin boy. Says Abaye, I agree that it's brilliant. It just doesn't prove anything. Guys, you're overlooking another possibility. And actually, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but lo, there is another reason that the Beis Din would have a mitzvah to go out. And that would be, kegon sheyatzulo sifa la'ir va'lazarot. So in order for us to be able to give extended kedusha to the boundaries of Yerushalayim, it is necessary to bring out the Sanhedrin, and you have to bring the Kurshtei Korbanos Teda, and you have a beautiful song that you sing with the Levim, and they go around, and they have the Shtei Tedes with them. And so it's a whole process to bring Kedusha. Now that would be very, very reasonable that they would be at Beis Pagi, because they were going to expand Yerushalayim further. So you found them at the point where they were taking off to now expand the city. So maybe that's why they were there. So you're right. It isn't really a proof, but nonetheless, there is a braita that says beferish that the case was that the Sanhedrin had gone for medidas egal rufa. In which case, Tanya Kavosei to Rabbi Yosef, we have a braita which spells it out. Mitza'ana beit pagi v'imra aleyem. If the Zakin Mamre found Sanhedrin in Beit Pagi, Kegonim, how would they be in Beit Pagi? Well, they might have gone out, Shiatzulim didatek la rufa, or maybe they went out, Lahosifa la irva la zarot. So the Brita speaks out both possibilities. So you see from here, Yochel Tei Amrata Amrata Amra'a Tamud Lomar Vekamta Valita Elamakom. So therefore, it's clear that they would have gone out entirely, and that must be like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Next case that we had was that we need a special kind of appraisal for Neter Avoy or Maisa Sheni, She'en Damav Yedui. In order to have that kind of appraisal, we need three people who are expert in this appraising. Tana Rabbana, Ezel Maisa Sheni, She'en Damav Yedui. So I understand what it means to say we don't know the value. How do we not know the value? I mean, there's a value that is written on the board of the stores in the shuk. So what's the problem? What we're talking about is Ezu Maisa Sheni, She'en Damav Yedui'in, Perot She'irkivu. You might have fruit, produce, that is no longer in good shape. So now the question is, you're going to have to, you know, you can try to auction it off. People may use it for other purposes, but it's certainly not going to be full market value. Or you might have yayin, shikrim. You might have wine that's in the process of souring. Well, you need an expert to tell you what this is worth, what you can get for such a thing. Or you might have ma'ot, sheikh lido. You want to use coins that are rusted. So you need an expert to be able to tell you what these kind of coins are worth, because you're not going to be able to pass them off in your makola. Tana Rabbana, Maaser Sheni She'en Damav Yedui'in, Podinato Bishlosha Lekuchot. What we need is three professional buyers. We have three professional buyers, then they know what the value is. Avalo Bishlosha She'en Lekuchot. You can't just take three people and see what they're ready to pay for something. So you need professional buyers that would actually vie for the price, and that would give us the price. And it doesn't matter, it doesn't even need to be Jewish. I mean, you could have a Nochri could be Echad Mihan. And for that matter, the owner could be one of them. And he could say what he's willing to pay for this stuff. So I feel Echad Mihan Abalim. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiya. I mean, is the idea over here that these are three completely different authorities? Let's say you've got three people who are in business together. They're all professional buyers, but they're all in business together. Is that sufficiently separate for it to be considered three different deot or not? Tashma, ish ushtei nashav. Let's say a guy is married to two women, and that all three of them are professional buyers. They can be put in Maisa Sheni She'en Damav Yedui'in. Now, usually, I mean, that would mean that they're in business together. The guy and his two wives. I mean, look at Alon. He's even thinking what it would be like to be in business together with his two wives, right? Maybe that woke him up. So apparently, you could have three people in business together. Nah, what do you mean? Alon is going to be the one you look to. You want to look to people who are in business with their wives? Take a look at Rav Papa. Rav Papa's wife was a brilliant businesswoman who wanted to have nothing to do with the beer business. Okay, you can understand that. So she went into business on her own, kept her own accounts, and refused to go into business with Rav Papa. These people, the stories that come out are just amazing, right? So here, what you didn't know in the back room of Papa Beer, there was another business being run by Mrs. Papa. Okay, so she went into business on her own. So maybe like Rav Papa and Abba Surah's daughter, that was the famous wife of Rav Papa, Bat Abba Surah used to refer to her as. So you can't bring her right from here. Okay, the next thing that we said about the Mishnah was Hegedeshot Bishlosha. You need three people that are going to give you an actual evaluation of things that are given to Hegdash that you want to be paid. Well, that would mean that our Mishnah argues with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the Tanya. What's the Lokei Tanya? The Tanya Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer? I don't care what we're talking about over here. We could have a filu tzinura shel Hegdash. You can have a little tiny tzinur. Rashi says tzinur is a little fork-like device that is used for spinning gold threads. It's a tiny little thing. You need 10 people in order to be koveya the appraisal, if you want to be paid at it. Amale Rav Papa Labaye, listen, I understand what Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is saying over here. Bishlam Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he apparently holds like Shmuel. Shmuel was the one who said, if you take a look in the number of parshiot, one after the other, that we find, that keep talking about the Erkecha HaKohen, or Kasher Yomar Kohen. There's 10 separate psukim in that, but they're three completely different parshios. Because, I mean, what we talk about over there is, first of all, we have the parsha of Erech in itself, which is the Erech Adah. So it says over there, Kasher Yarich HaKohen, Kerkecha HaKohen, almost three times. Then we have the din of how to be paid a behema of Hegdesh. And over there, we have an additional three times that it uses the same type of language about the Kohen. And then we have this sugya of somebody who is Magdish Sadehu. So over there, it uses the word Kohen four times. So you put them all together, you have 10 mentions of Kohanim, according to which we learn. So then that means, obviously, you need 10 people that are going to be able to give an appraisal. So then I understand if that's how Reb Elazar ben Yaakov learns. He learns exactly the same way that Shmuel understood it. So I get the idea that you need 10. So he feels that they're all one big sugya, yeah? And that all of these would require 10. But the Rabbanan who say that you need 3, I mean, like, where do you come up with 3? It should be either 10, or you just go to a professional appraiser. But 3 doesn't seem to make sense. V'chi tema, so maybe they'll say it like this. Look, the Rabbanan say each set is different over here. There's one set of 3 that has to do with Pidyon Hekadeshes, and there it says 3. So we use those 3. But if that was the case, then Karkaot, it doesn't have 3. Karkaot, it says 4. So the Rabbanan should say that when it comes to Karka, you need 4 people. But instead, it says you need 10 people. So 4 people are not enough. So then that means that you're not splitting this into separate sets. Erechin, Pinyan Hekadeshos, including the Metaltalin, and then we have the special Aloch of Karka, right? Okay. So then how do you explain it? Now, what you could say is that the truth would be that the Rabbanan hold you need only 4. We don't find anybody who said 4. The Mishnah said HaKarkaot required Tisha of the Kohen, 9 people, one of them is a Kohen. So obviously we are learning the 10 mentions of the Kohuna, and we're going to use them all. So Elamites, what are you going to say? You're going to say, the Mishal Nebu Asara. And we end up, since the last 4 are added to the previous 6, therefore you get 10. So that would explain you've only got 4 written in Karka, but they're mashlim 10 mentions of Kohen, so altogether we have 10 people. But if that's the case, then we should need 6 people for the pidyon of the Hekadeshes, because we had 3 for Erechin, we should add it to the next 3. If you're telling me that these are successive sets, then why don't we need 6? So then we boil the Roshita. Yeah, you're right. That is a kasha. To be continued, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Meanwhile, a Freilich and Chanukah, and a Chodesh Tov, umevurach to all.